Bhagavad Gita is a book of mankind's collected experience of and answers to life's most basic questions. Who I am? From where do I come? What is my purpose and destiny? And most practically, how do I find happiness? These podcasts originate in the lectures of Neil Bhatt, a disciple of Swami Chinmayananda. They are presented here in 20 to 30 minute segments, each covering three of the Gita's 701 verses. Welcome to Gita Wisdom for Daily Living.
In studying Bhagavad Gita, we have seen that the Bhagavad Gita divided into three parts, describing Tattvamasi, that thou art. Thou that is you as you are, that which is the Lord which you are seeking, in the one, they both are one and the same. So in the first six chapters we have talked about you as we are today. Next six chapter, we talked about the identity of the Lord. But then how do we reconcile that they both are one and the same? I don't see it. So the chapter 13 onward is an explanation of how these two are one and the same. Myself and the Supreme Self are not two different selves, but just one and the same. So the chapter 13 started with saying how this differentiation come in our perception, in our understanding of I and the world. The duality created between myself and everything other than that which I consider myself. So the chapter 13 we have seen it, Kshetra, Kshetragna Vibhaga Yoga. The differentiation that is created in my understanding between the field and its knower. And the differentiation right now is very clear. I am the knower of the world that I know, and world is my field of actions. This chapter takes it a one notch higher and said, Idam Shariram Kaunteya Iti Kshetram. This, which I consider as a knower right now, is actually part of the field. This body is the field, and one who knows the body is the knower. So we took it to a one more subtler level, the definition which I know intuitively, that I am the knower and the world is my field. So now I have included my body as part of the world. Neither knower remains somewhat other than this body. Then we also include the mind and intellect and all my emotions into it. All the vikaras, as I say, the modifications of this field. All my emotions into it. My experiences into it. Then what is left, who is aware of everything, is the knower. The field is where all the activity is taking place. We have also defined it in a different way, Prakriti and Purusha. So now we know there are two entities which constitute my world. My world is the world of the matter, the field in which all the activity is taking place, the one who knows and feels the results and the reactions of this activity. At my microcosmic level, at my level, when I'm identified with this field, what I consider my body, my mind, my intellect, the one who is aware of this and identifying with it, he becomes the enjoyer or sufferer of the activities taken place by my mind, my intellect, and my body. So he is applicable to all bodies, minds, and intellects. And then Bhagavan said, both the field and the knower of the field are beginningless. You can't say, when did this start? The question, obviously, legitimately is, why and when? When this ignorance started about myself, that I am not the Supreme Self, and why? The answer is given in a way which requires more contemplation, but it basically says they both are beginningless. There's not really a beginning that one day Bhagavan said, well, let there be Prakriti and let them suffer through it. They're beginningless. because they are the very nature of the Lord. And therefore, both the Prakriti and Purusha are the nature of the Lord. As we have seen in previous chapter, and say my higher Prakriti and my lower Prakriti. My lower Prakriti is the manifest world, and my higher Prakriti is the one which supports this lower Prakriti, makes this lower Prakriti function, is my higher Prakriti. In this chapter, we have seen it in different ways, and say Purusha is the one, the subtler, the higher unmanifest self, and the Prakriti is the most manifest self, which we can say. So both are beginningless because they are the very nature of the Supreme, the Brahman. Anything which has a cause becomes an effect. Every effect has its qualities. These qualities makes it perishable, and therefore they remain in time and space for a time. As long as the qualities are attributed to that effect, it has a cause and it has a timeline. But something which is beginningless obviously cannot have any qualities. Therefore, the Brahman does not have any qualities, and therefore it has no cause. And if it has no cause, it is beginningless. If this Prakriti and Purusha are the two aspects of the Supreme, then they both are beginningless. So we started with this basic understanding. Then he said, if that's the case, then obviously all hands are his, all mouths are his. So anywhere or any place where a thing or a being is coming into existence, that because of the union between these two, the Prakriti and Purusha. The creation only takes place of anything or a being when this to the Prakriti and Purusha, the filled and its knower, come together. If there is no knower, there is no filled. And if there is no filled, there is no knower. As long as I consider myself a being, a living being, as long as, one, I have this body, mind and intellect, and secondly, I'm aware of it. If I'm not aware of it, do I really exist? Therefore the question, do you really exist in deep sleep? I know I exist in a waking world. I know I exist in a dream as a dreamer. But do I really exist in my deep sleep? Because I'm not aware of myself. But I'm very aware of myself, even though I'm not aware of my body, mind, and intellect. Therefore I wake up and say, I had a good sleep. If I'm not aware of myself, I wouldn't be able to say that. Therefore, I say, I exist even in my deep sleep. I exist as a waker. I exist as a dreamer. I also exist as a deep sleeper. As this limited ego, I considered myself. And then Bhagavan takes us to the path where he says, what is knowledge and what is to be known? He said, what is to be known is seated in hearts of all the beings and all the things. The core of our being is our awareness about ourself. That is to be known. Who is that is aware of my being? And that leads me to the knowledge, is the knowledge. Everything else other than that is ignorance. So we have seen those several qualities, amanitvam, adambitvam. Those qualities lead me to know the knowable in my heart. So I say those qualities will take me to knowing the self, which then will make me aware that myself is no distinct than yourself and herself and himself, but is a one self. Once that understanding takes place, Bhagavan said, he achieves the supreme state. Why I feel limited? How can I get over my limitations? How can I be perennially happy? That state, Bhagavan said, you will achieve when you will understand that this self in me is the self which is seated in all hearts, moving or unmoving. That is the core, the essence of all the beings, you know. And then Bhagavan said that many, many people have recognized this self through many different paths. You see, Dhyana Yoga, Karma Yoga, Gnana Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. You see, there are various paths people have attained this knowledge about their own self. And in turn, got the knowledge of the Paramatma. But he says some may not even be capable of following any path, but just having the faith in somebody's words, they have attained this. Just having that faith that, no, because my guru told me, oh, such and such person told me. And having pursued that, they also achieved that. Last few verses, that what is the test where I can consider myself that I have come to know this thing? Tamam pasyan hi sarvatra sama avastitam ishwaram na hinasya atman atmanam tato yati paramgatim. One who starts seeing that the Ishwarat, my Lord, is sitting equally in all hearts, is present everywhere equally, and therefore I am not negating the Supreme Self by my small self. Right now I have already negated. I only consider this is me. Nothing other than this I consider me. That's not me, that's not me, that's not me, that's not me. Only this is me. And Bhagavan says, once I say this is all me, I'm not negated. Even though I'm aware of this limited self, but I'm also aware that this extension of this world is nothing but me alone. Just as the example we have seen, this conditioned room space was never separated from the space outside. Right now I'm aware of this conditioned space and that this is room space. But also if I have a vision which says the room space and the space is one and the same, then I truly have the knowledge of the space, you know, Bhagavan said. Last few verses expands on this idea that I'm constantly aware of both my existence. My existence as this limited ego, as the conditioned self, as this body, mind and intellect, but at the same time aware of my existence as the Supreme Self. You know. So the last few verses we have seen last time say, anadityat nirgunatvat paramatma ayam avyayaha sarirasthopi kauntaya na karoti na lipyate. This paramatma, this self of mine at its greater level, is anadityat nirgunatvat, it being without beginning and being devoid of all qualities. My this limited self has beginning and the end. I was born and I will die. Or you can say wherever my ego started many births ago. And once I realize that this conditioned self is none other than that beginningless and nirgunatvat. I have all the qualities right now. Nearly the nice person, not so nice. All these things are qualities of my body, mind and intellect, which I perceive one way and the world perceives one way and other way. But he says these qualities are not the qualities of myself. These are the qualities of my conditioning, the prakriti. The prakriti is my manifest self, has the qualities. But my real self, which is knowing this Prakriti, has no qualities. Because as I said, the Bhagavan, the self has no cause. And therefore it is beginningless. And because it is beginningless and no cause, it cannot have any qualities which makes it limited. Therefore knowing that, the Paramatma, which is immutable, imperishable, is beginningless and qualityless, and so is the nature of myself. Sarirasthopi kamteya na karoti na lipyate. And therefore, though it is seated in my heart, in this body, as the propeller for this body to perform actions, it is not doing anything. No actions are being performed by myself. All actions are performed by the qualities of the Prakriti. Therefore, in Gujarati, there is a this saying, say, prana and prakriti sathe jai. The prana and the prakriti, both goes together. Nothing goes first or nothing goes later. In other words, my inherent nature will not change no matter what happens, you know. I cannot suddenly become interested in boxing or wrestling, you know, because my inherent nature is not to be in there. So Bhagavan said, Sarirasthopi kamate, even though it seems he is seated in this heart and propelling this body, mind and intellect to act, the acts are only performed by this body, mind and intellect and belong to them alone. As long as this conditioned self is identifying with it, it suffers and it enjoys. When that identification is removed, there is no suffering or enjoyment because of the absence of this body. So therefore he says, na karoti, he is not doing anything, na lipyate, he is not affected by it. The next verse says, yatha sarvagatam sukshmat akasham na upalipyade sarvatra avastito dehe tatha atma na upalipyade. Classical analogy. They just as, and I use very conveniently as an architect the space, but even they have used the same. Just as, because of its subtle nature, the space is not, it says akasha, akasha is space. Now the translation, he says ether. And some of you may say, well, why ether? But those of you who know a little bit of physics, some point of time before they figured out that light does not need anything, any medium to travel from its source, the sun, to wherever, they thought this space must be filled with some other material which is invisible or in no qualities. So they called it ether. So that in the ether, all this light is, you know, traveling. But obviously now the science has no need for ether because they figured out light can travel without that. So the concept of ether is no more in our modern day science. But the ether basically equates to space. So the space, just as the space, because of its subtlest nature, is not affected by anything that is happening within the space, so is sarvatra avasthito dehe tatha atma na upalipyate. Just as space doesn't get tainted, no matter I have a dirty building, ugly building, good building, nice forest, whatever that is, space remains untainted. As soon as you remove this, space as it was before, pristine, before this building was built. That's because what are the qualities of space? None. We don't know. We can't say space is liquid, it is solid. We also can't say space is defined as the length, breadth and width. Everything we define of the space today is actually the definition of the conditioning. When we say this room is large, all we are saying is how far the walls are apart from each other. Is with the tall, well, how far the wall is, the floor is away from the ceiling. Even when you say ground space is larger, what we are saying is as long as there's the next boundary, I can say. So the nature of the space is pretty close to the nature of ourself in terms of definition. Space is, when was the space created? Now we architects do take great pride and say, I created this space, grand space. Do I really have capability to do that? No. All I did is manipulated the space. So space was beginningless, was not created, and therefore anything I create does not taint it. Anything I destroy does not destroy it. Same it says, sarvatra avasthito dehe. The same way living in all the dehis, the atma is not tainted by any actions by the dehi. Another analogy now given is, yatha prakasayati ekah krishnam lokam imam ravih. Just as the one sun illumines the whole world, at least our world, you know, Kshetram Kshetri Tatha Krishnam Prakashayati Bharata. Swamiji gives a very nice explanation of this and said, we normally say, well, we worship sun because sun is doing this for us. Sun is giving us energy. But is he really? Is it really? And the answer is no. Sun is truly not doing anything. Because Swamiji defines the action as, if I perform action, I should have a reason and a cause to do that. The sun has no really reason to illumine this world. It's just what it is. By its very nature, he illumines this world. And he does not take any part of it. In a sense, therefore, whatever is happening under the sunlight, nobody can blame the sunlight. In the same way, the Kshetri, the Lord of the Kshetra, the Lord of this field, is illumining the entire Kshetra by doing nothing, but being who he is or it is. It is, Swamiji also gave an example, you know, a boss may not say anything in the office, but just by being there, the office starts working more efficiently and effectively. You know. Boss goes out, and I like this example very much because my boss, when I used to work in India, used to come to the United States because he had a green card. So he'll come here for about a couple of months. Those couple of months, we have filled. I'll tell you, nothing gets done in those two fields. Last, when we say, now the week is left, Jitendra Bhai is coming back, we start drawing something up so at least when he comes back, we can show him we have done this thing. Now when he comes back, everything is normal. The same with the Kshetri not doing anything. He is illuminating the entire field of activities. So, just as the sun doesn't do anything, but just by being who he is, illumines the whole world, Kshetri, the Purusha, the self, the knower of this entire field, doesn't do anything but being itself, it illumines the whole activity. Therefore, he is actionless. It is just his nature to do what it is. And the last verse now simply concludes what we have already seen. It says, Kshetra Kshetrajnayoho evam antaram gnana chakshusa. Bhuta prakriti moksam cha e viduryanti te param. That param state which you and I are constantly seeking day and night, where there is no unhappiness, there is no sorrow, there is no limits, and everything will be just perfect for me. You see, you can only achieve by the gnana chakshusa, not by doing anything. By doing all the things I'm doing right now to getting over these limitations, I'm creating more limitations for me. I accumulate wealth and say, well, this will help me. Well, that creates more problem. Stock market collapses and I lose all of that and now I'm more miserable. Anything I'm doing in this world to getting over my limitations creates more limitation. But Bhagavan says, by gnana chakshu, by the eye of knowledge, one who sees the difference between the Kshetra and the Kshetri, Kshetrajna, one who knows that this field of activity is because of the nature of the Prakriti, which is bound by this cause and effect, and things will continue to happen in this, and therefore it's called samsara, samsarati. But the knower is not getting affected, but the knower is not doing anything in it. You know. Bhuta Prakriti Moksham, and therefore he liberates himself from the association with the Prakriti. Right now I suffer and be happy or unhappy because my attachment to this body, this mind, this intellect, the Prakriti. This attachment is the cause for the Purusha to suffer sukha and dukkha. If this attachment with my eye of knowledge I can detach, when you get hurt, what do I say? I'm so sorry that you get hurt. When I get hurt, is that sorry will do? No. But if I can do the same sorry to me and say, I'm sorry you got hurt, Neil. Bhagavan said, Viduryanti te param. He achieves that state which you are seeking all along. becoming one with that unlimited, beginningless Lord, the Self who is the Lord of your heart. Well, with that, we concluded chapter 13.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhina, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shantihi, Shantihi, Shantihi. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.